Good morning. We're going to call to order the Agriculture and Food Finance and Policy Division. We are awaiting at least one more person, I think, before we'll, here we have our quorum. So I'm going to move the minutes of the February 25th meeting. They're in members' packets. Is there any discussion, additions, corrections? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. The minutes are adopted. Just want to note that our previous minutes, the February 13th minutes, Representative Wasilewicz was inadvertently listed as present, although she was excused from that meeting, so we wanted to just correct those minutes. They're not in our in our packet, but just so we know that. So there will be a procedural motion to do that. And the first one is that I move to reconsider the motion by which the minutes from February 13th were adopted. So all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed, nay. The motion prevails, and the minutes from February 13th are before us. So now I move adoption of those minutes from February 13th as corrected by the Committee of Legislative Assistant. Any questions? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed, nay. That motion prevails, and the minutes then are adopted for that as well. So today we're going to start, Minnesota Department of Ag is going to give us a report on Agri. That's the program we fund. Provides a variety of grants to a number of people and groups. We want to kind of get an update from them about that. We were going to hear some cottage food bills. Those have been removed from our agenda today, but it is Hunger Day at the Capitol, so there may be people here that have an interest in hunger and food specifically. So just so you know that. And then one final announcement before we turn it over to the MDA is Dana Bujold, did I say that correctly, is our committee page. So if you'll just step forward, I just want to introduce you. And if you have, would you just tell us a little bit about yourself, please?
Yeah, I'm Dana Bujold. I just graduated from the University of Minnesota Duluth this last fall.
Welcome. We're happy to have you. It's nice to have someone that we can rely on, a permanent committee page. So welcome to the committee. So we now have the Minnesota Department of Ag. They can come before us. Mr. Hugenin, welcome to the committee. Just to go ahead and state your names as you present your testimony. Thank you.
Wonderful. Good morning, and thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Paul Hugenin. I'm the Director of the Ag Marketing and Development Division at the Department of Agriculture. We'll tag team this presentation, and Ashley Bress will follow me with some of the more detailed parts of the report. I'd like to call your attention. There are actually three handouts in your packet that are relevant to what we'll talk about today. One is the PowerPoint slides of what you'll see on the monitors. The second is the full Agri legislative report, so that's the thicker document. That's 40 pages. And then the third is the Good Food Access Report. And so those are all three things that are relevant to the conversation this morning. So rather than try to walk you through painstakingly through the full 40-page Agri report, what we want to do today is do our best to summarize and highlight some of the key areas. And we're also really pleased that we've got three folks with us today who are actually people who've received grants through Agri, and they'll be able to talk to you about what difference that's made in their businesses and how their experience has been in working with the Agri program. But the first thing that I want to do is just take a second to thank this committee. I want to thank you for the support that you've given to the Agri program, and thank you for the flexibility that you've given us to do our best to maximize the impact of these funds. And, you know, not all of our staff gets to come to all these meetings, and so I just wanted to share with you how proud our staff is of the ability to implement these funds and proud of the work that it does for farmers and processors around the state. For those relatively new to the committee, I just wanted to start by saying that the Agri program is what was created when the ethanol producer payment program ended. So during the 90s and early 2000s, the state invested about $20 million a year in new ethanol plants around the state. And as that program neared its sunset, this committee was instrumental in making sure that Agri was created so that these funds could continue to be invested in Minnesota for the benefit of the agricultural economy. Fiscal year 12 was actually the first year where we had Agri funding, and that was a partial year of funding. And then starting in fiscal year 13 is where we went to full funding, which at that time was just over $10 million a year. And as you now know now, in this biennium, Agri is $14.35 million per year. And of course, I forgot to move the slide. So the budget rider for Agri lays out a pretty long list of eligible programs. And what this slide shows is kind of the what we would view as the core group of grant programs that have been funded by Agri since its first year of full funding. A couple things I wanted to note is that a couple of these programs are actually grant programs that were created by the legislature prior to Agri. So the Livestock Investment Grant Program and the Sustainable Ag Development Grant Program are two programs that have their own statutory language, their own rules set in statute. It's just that the funding for those programs has shifted and is now part of Agri. The rest of those programs were created specifically to be part of Agri. So in the most recent biennium, so in fiscal year 18 and 19, the Agri budget included several new and unique programs that were created for specific needs and opportunities. So for example, the first thing on the list is that the rider gave us the authority to make a limited number of large value-added grants. So we had the ability to make grants that ranged between $200,000 and $1 million. Our typical mode of operation for value-added grants is the maximum award is $199,000. So that was authority that only existed in the previous biennium. The Urban Ag Grants and the Good Food Access Program were both added to Agri for the fiscal 18-19 biennium. The Good Food Access Program was actually created by this committee in fiscal year 17. At that time, it was a separate line item in the state budget. And then with the last biennium, it was rolled in to be a part of Agri. I want to take a second to mention the Biofuel Infrastructure Partnership, because that was a really good example of how the flexibility that you've allowed us to have in Agri really paid dividends. So what it allowed the department to do was secure $8 million of federal funding for biofuel infrastructure projects around the state of Minnesota. So that included things like underground tanks, flex fuel pumps, and other pumps that are needed to be able to dispense higher percentages of biofuel at retail. The last item on the list on this slide is the dairy farm improvement grants. And so that was something we did in fiscal year 19, and it's not dairy with an I, so this preceded dairy with an I. We'll talk a little bit more about that in a second. But this was a program that we did at the end of fiscal 19 because of the crisis that was going on in the dairy industry. And it was a really important thing for Commissioner Peterson when he arrived to be able to do something for dairy farmers. And this targeted farmers who needed or wanted to transition from grade B to grade A, or who needed to make some sort of an improvement to maintain grade A status. We had originally assumed we'd be able to issue about $250,000 of grants for that particular program. The demand from dairy farmers was such that we were actually able to award $750,000 to dairy farmers for that program. This next slide shows just kind of graphically how the amount of available money in Agri that's not prescribed or not earmarked is significantly less for this fiscal year than it was in the previous biennium. And it's not a complaint. We're super proud of being able to do dairy with an eye. But I just, as committee members, I want you to know, and I'll show you in a little bit, kind of what impact that has on some of the other programs that we administer. Before I shift from the last biennium into where we're at with the current biennium, as you've got the full Agri report in front of you, I wanted to highlight something that's in it so that as you have time in your offices and you're perusing that, I wanted to call your attention to something that's really important to us. You'll see that we have created lists of grantees and maps of where those folks are located. That's one of the examples I can give you with the program I just talked about, the Dairy Farm Improvement Grant. Pages 19 through 21 will list all the grant recipients. You can see what county they're in, the city, the name of the farm. And then on page 22, you'll see a map of where all of them are located. It was really important to us. We want you as the policymakers to be able to at a glance see where is this money going, who's receiving it, so that you have a clear indication of where we're investing those funds. So as we look at the current biennium, another way to look at that, and here's the things that are kind of called out by name in there. So there's $14.35 million. That's the annual appropriation. The largest, of course, dedicated amount in there is $5 million for Dairy with an I. And you heard my colleague actually talk about that last week and give you an update. One super quick update on that is we are now up to just short of 600 final payments that have been processed by our divisions. By our division, more of those go over to the finance and budget division just about every day. So we're making good progress on getting the last batch of payments out to producers. Bioincentive payments, that was increased from the previous biennium to be $2.5 million per year in this biennium. There's a separate bioincentive report that you either have or you will have that will detail who are the recipients, et cetera. The one thing I want to let this committee know this morning is that of that $2.5 million in this current fiscal year, we have already had all of that money claimed. And so kind of as we anticipated and industry anticipated, demand for that has really, really taken off. A lot of those plants are in full production now. So that $2.5 million has all been claimed for this year. County fair grants is certainly something that's been a part of the agri appropriation, I think, since the beginning and continues to be. I wanted to take just a minute and talk a little bit about farm to school, because this committee has invested a lot of time and energy and effort around that topic of farm to school. And I want to start by saying, even though it wasn't funded by Agri, we are super appreciative of the fact that you worked and approved a new position for us that includes farm to school as part of their PD. And it's the first time we've ever had a position that has a part of their time dedicated to that. The person is here, they're on the ground, she is running full steam ahead. In addition to farm to school, she's always also working on things like farm to restaurant, farm to grocery store. You know, basically, this position fits what used to be a gap between the Minnesota Grown program, which is largely direct to the end consumer, and some of our work with helping food companies and processors go to national and international trade shows. So we're very appreciative of that. As it relates to agri funding for farm to school, that's $400,000 per year. First year of the biennium, we are handling it just like we have in the past, which means equipment grants and milk cooler grants. The second year of the biennium, however, is where we will utilize language that you all passed last session, which allows us to do a pilot program that would put money into school districts' hands for the actual purchase of locally grown and raised foods. So that's an exciting new opportunity. It's a pilot project. Our new staff person is working with our grants person to put together the request for proposals. That will be released later on this spring, and so we're very much looking forward to implementing that and being able to come back and share those results with you next year. Urban Ag and Good Food Access are both programs that are now funded out of the Agri program. The Good Food Access report is one of those reports you have in your packet today. And the last thing I wanted to mention is there's two small earmarks within this Agri appropriation. One is to the Minnesota Turf Seed Council. Historically, that has always been a separate line item outside of Agri. It was moved into Agri for this year, so just wanted to let you see that. And then the Greater Mankato Growth is a one-year-only appropriation that is out of Agri this year. So another way to look at that, $14.35 million is the Agri appropriation, $9.65 million in prescribed spending. That leaves us $4.7 million for everything else. And so by everything else, you know, what we're looking at is things like livestock investment grants, crop research. And those are traditionally really competitive programs, but they've become even more competitive. If we were to fund those at the levels that we did in the previous biennium, we'd need about another $4 million. So what it means simply is that our evaluation committees are working really hard. They have a lot of tough choices to make, but you will see we will have a number of really good projects come out of there. But I just wanted to make you aware of here's where we're at in terms of the budget. So at this
Mr.
point,
Huguenin, oh, yes. Can I just interrupt you? Just I apologize, but we do have a question. So Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I have to go to the forecast briefing, so I'll make it quick. Mr. Huguenin, So looking at the timeline and where the dollars are, we're getting into a fairly mature program of 10 years, roughly, when we go into the next year. And I wonder if the department has thought, and this is maybe for next year with the budget, to have a third-party analysis of, I mean, we hear each year the outputs, how much money we spent on what things, but looking at the outcomes in terms of has the money that has been invested actually had an impact? And if for example, let's say we've given a livestock investment grant and then the farm closed, I mean, do we know those answers? Do we know, like often with deed, we have to look at the multiplier effect of when we provide a grant, how much money comes. And I don't know if you've looked at that, if the university, maybe Ag Economics or somebody to look at a program to just give us a feedback for looking at this in the future on what has happened in the past. Is it effective? Is it having an impact rather than just providing a dollar to those? You know, we know how much we've spent. How much have we gained from that spending? So that's my question.
Mr. Huguenin.
Yeah, Madam Chair and Representative Hansen, that's a great question, and it's something that we literally have been talking about very constantly right now. So as we look back and you go, okay, 2012, 2013, we're in that seven-year range. We do what we can to evaluate programs kind of as they happen. So, for example, shows that or companies that go to our shows, we can do surveys to determine what kind of new business they have. But the kinds of questions you asked about, so let's take a look at our livestock investment grant recipients from 5-6 years ago. Are they in business? Are they more profitable than they were 6 years ago? Are they bigger? Are they making more money than they were? And what impact did these grants have on it? So, or are there some of them that have gone out of business? So the short answer to your question is that is absolutely on our agenda, and we fully expect to come before you next year and be able to show you some pretty detailed numbers about that. So thank you for the question.
Thank you. Representative Miller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to say that people might want to mark this moment because I agree 100% with Representative Hansen. I think that, and this is the message to the Ag Department, as I mentioned briefly in the last committee, I'm assisting in the scoring this year, and it's been both wonderful and difficult at the same time. I'm not, but I wanted to understand the program. That's I kind of submitted myself to that, and I look forward to going through the whole process to understand that. But this exact question kept coming back in my mind, particularly when you saw people that were coming back for a second grant, because that's when you'd raise the question, I wonder how the first grant went, because we don't really see that. And I totally respect, it's not a questioning of the department itself, but I think having another set of eyes, independent set, we don't have to go down a real long road with this, but just saying, what does this look like? Are we actually doing the things that we said that we would accomplish? I think that, because we are. I think you stated it perfectly well, Representative, that we have some time that has gone by with these. I've seen the applicants, you know, they kind of carry a rhythm when you see these applications coming through. You kind of see them. But yet we don't know what it looks like when we come out the other end, and I think that should be a priority in the coming year.
Thank you. Mr. Huguenin, you can go ahead.
Thank you so much. And Representative Miller, I greatly appreciate that and know that that's a priority for us, and so we very much look forward to that. And thank you for being a part of the evaluation process. It's very important. So at this point, what I would like to do is transition and turn it over to my colleague, Ashley Bress, who will give you kind of an update on where we're at in fiscal year 20, as well as to introduce the guests that we have in front of us today.
Very good. Ms. Bress, welcome to the committee.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Ashley Bress. I supervise the grants team in the Ag Marketing and Development Division. Thank you for having me here. I want to give a brief update on where we are at in our grant making for fiscal year 2020, now that we're a little over halfway through the year. We have awarded or are in the very process of awarding the majority of our grants. Our crop research grants, which as Paul mentioned, we traditionally do at about $2 million a year. We have $1 million available this year. We are in the process of awarding about $1 million for 8 projects. Traditionally, we wouldn't be able to do about 8 to do eight projects with this amount of money, but we luckily had a number of proposals that were submitted at lower levels. So we'll still be able to do about the same number, just smaller projects. Our sustainable egg demonstration grants, which have now been with us for many, many years via Seeding Agri. Again, we're looking at doing about eight projects for about $160,000. We're working on contracting those right now, but those recipients know that that money is coming to them. Our farm to school grants, we have done an RFP for the traditional equipment and planning grants. So those are for schools and early care or organizations that need things like robocous, combi ovens, coolers, freezers, salad bars. We awarded 12 grants worth about $155,000. But as you see in the accepting applications line, we also have an RFP that's open right now for schools and early care organizations to apply for grants for milk coolers. We know that kids who have access to cold milk will drink it. They're more apt to drink it. And if they enjoy their milk when they're young, they're more apt to become lifelong consumers of milk. So we do have that grant opportunity available for them now. Paul also talked a little bit about that bio incentive program and how we have already spent the $2.5 million that was available. Our farm business management scholarships, we have promised all of that money to students. We have $500,000 available, and that is all expended now. Our county fair grants, that RFP closed a couple of weeks ago. Those grants are available to county fairs on an equal share basis, and we're currently in the process of awarding those grants. I think we're right around 85 grants under that program, give or take a couple. And then finally, what has been the focus of my attention over the last 6 to 8 months is that Dairy with an Eye program, where we're approaching 600 additional checks out the door, in addition to the 1,800 that went out in round one. And we look forward to doing the last 1,200 as soon as we are able to. We also have a number of grants where the RFPs have recently closed. So there we have our good food access grants, both the equipment and physical improvement grants, as well as those technical assistance grants. Those equipment grants are made available to retailers. So that's usually going to mean organizations like grocery stores, corner stores, and farmers markets, although other models are eligible to apply. We are beginning to review those, but we did receive we received 31 applications requesting about $785,000 for the $225,000 that we have available there. So that would be a pretty competitive grant, just like it normally is. On the technical assistance side of the house, which are grants that are geared towards TA providers, such as regional economic development, organizations, local public health, and others, I'm hoping we'll be able to make those announcements in the next week or two. But we received 6 applications requesting $215,000 with about $50,000 available to grant. So we'll be able to fund about a quarter of the request. That holds true as well with our value-added grants and our livestock investment grants, which are also currently under review or being very close to being announced. For our value-added grants, which we traditionally do twice a year at $1 million a year, or $1 million per round, this year we have $1 million available in total, so we did just one round. But in that one round, we received 59 applications with a total request of $3.2 million. So again, we'll be able to fund about a third of that. And with livestock investment, we received 147 applications requesting $2.5 million. So again, that one is going to be extra competitive this year. We expect that we'll be able to do about a quarter of the request. And then finally, there are still a few programs where we are still accepting applications. As I mentioned, those milk cooler grants will be open for about another 6 weeks or so, and we're eager to get that money out the door into school districts and early cares. Our trade show and demo support program, which helps small food companies exhibit at trade events, and but also in a also do sampling within grocery stores. Is still open. We have done we've done payments for quarters one and two, but we're still accepting claims for three and four. Mm-hmm. And then finally, our gap cost share, pretty small program for us that we traditionally do at about $25,000. We're looking closer to $15,000 this year, but that's really intended to help producers and processors pay for those costs of getting gap or GIP certified. This is a pretty significant program for the department, and because of that, one of our top priorities is making sure that we are implementing the program as well as we can, as efficiently as we can, and as effectively as we can. As a part of that, the Agri Budget Writer does allow us to take 6.5% for admin. If we were to do that, that would give us about $925,000 or so a year to administer the program. Our goal is to never use that full amount, but it's helpful to know that full amount is there for us should we need it. And any funds that we don't use for admin are then rolled into our grant making. However, out of that 6.5%, we do have about 7 FTEs who work on this program, or on all the programs together. Each staff, or all each year, we're awarding somewhere around 700 grants, maybe 750 cost share opportunities, and that doesn't take into account dairy. But many of our grants last for 2, if not 3 years. So our staff are managing a good number of the grants. One of the things that we do is when we're reviewing our grant applications to ensure that they're going to the best quality candidates we have, we rely on external evaluators. So those are often previous recipients, support services that are applicable to that particular project or that particular sector. But we also rely on our friends and our colleagues at DEED and the Ag Utilization Research Institute to participate in that. One thing that we do that we have become a model for around the state is to provide stipends to our external reviewers. State employees are obviously not going to get those stipends, but when we're bringing in somebody who's completely outside of the system, we find that it's really important to pay them for their time and their effort. They're experts in their field, and we pay them as such, but many of them are also just doing it out of the goodness of their heart because they know that's an important piece. We're always doing our best to follow all of the Office of Grants Management guidelines. There's a 13 policy framework there, and we are always doing our best to exceed those standards. One area that we exceed very consistently is site visits. State policy requires that we do site visits on projects where we have an investment of over $50,000, but our procedure is to do site visits on projects over $25,000. We feel that's important for both our staff as a professional development opportunity and to get them out into the field, but it's also good for our grantees to see us out there. We're talking with them. We're learning with them. We're a friendly face when we come out. And then finally, for most of our projects, we work on a reimbursement basis, which would mean that the farmer, the processor, that the grantee would go out, do the work, pay for the work, and then we reimburse them a portion of those costs. There are two grants where we do advance funds under certain circumstances, those being the Good Food Access Equipment Grants and the Urban Agriculture Grants, because we know that those grantees are often lacking access to other forms of capital. But even then, we have pretty strict requirements for when we are willing to do that. So at this point, I would like to change up a little bit about what we're doing. And I would like to invite Darren Fremming from TFC Poultry to come down and join me. While he's coming down, a little bit about our value-added grants, which he has received, I think, now two of. These grants are intended to help businesses, including meat processors, purchase the equipment and make those physical improvements that they need in order to upgrade and modernize their businesses with a focus on food safety. One of our big goals with these grants is to increase the usage of Minnesota egg products that are then used by those businesses. As I mentioned, we typically do about $2 million a year in these. This biennium, we're looking at about $1 million a year. Our awards range from about $1,000 to either $150,000 or $199,000, depending upon the year that we're talking about and the available resources. We put in 25% of the costs. The applicant is required to match with 75%. That really does ensure that they have skin in the game and are making investments that are the right choice for their business. And as I mentioned, this year we have requests totaling $3.2 million, so it will be a tough call to make. And with that, I'm happy to turn it over.
Thank you, Ms. Bress. And before we turn to the testifier, Representative Anderson has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Bress, you mentioned, I believe I heard correctly, $500,000 for FBM scholarships. Was that correct?
Ms. Bress.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, that is correct. That's a little bit lower than what we had available last year, but those funds are fully used.
Representative Anderson.
Thanks again, Madam Chair. The last meeting I was at, I think they talked about the average scholarship cost being around $1,700, so that's just a shade under 300 scholarships. How are those awarded? First-time participants in the program, or how do you go about divvying those out and who gets them?
Ms. Bass.
Madam Chair, Representative, those are traditionally done on a first-come, first-served basis, although it's limited to producers who are in their first 10 years of that's limited to their first 40 credit hours. But traditionally, they're done on a first-come, first-served basis with strong partnership from their FBM in instructors.
Yeah, Representative Anderson.
Just one last quick one. I would like to see a map, if one would be available, on where those farm-to-school grants went, to kind of make sure that they're getting around statewide, and I'd like to just see where those grants went. If you could find that, not today, but some other day, I'd like to see that.
Thank you. Ms. Bress, you'll be able to provide that, perhaps.
Madam Chair, just Representative, it actually is available in Appendix 10, which is page 31 of the legislative report.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. Okay, so welcome to the committee. We're going to, we had another question. Sorry. Is it Representative Cleborne? Oh.
I just want to say I've spent some time while sitting here and listening to you go through this report. I love the graphics. They're great, and it was very easy for me to quickly identify where in my community services went as well. And so I just, it looks great. I just want to say that. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Now, Mr. Fleming, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representatives. My name is Darren Fleming. I am co-owner of TFC Poultry in Ashby. Ashby is located between Fergus Falls and Alexandria. We have about 75 employees, and we are a turkey deboning company. So we bring in primarily turkey thighs from various slaughter plants, and we bring them in, we debone. We put the labor to them, and we break that product down and debone it into a boneless form. From there, it goes on to various customers that are making turkey bacon, turkey sausage, turkey roast, turkey ham, whatever it might be from that boneless product. We do about 35 million pounds a year. Put that in context, for about 30, 35 loads in and out a week. Takes a lot of turkeys to make 35 million pounds, but it's a pretty small fraction when you look at the 250 million birds that are processed each year. And so we're in a commodity industry. And everyone that we buy from and everyone that we compete against are all larger. We're the small fish in the pond. There's many of them are hundreds of millions or billion-dollar companies. And in order for us to keep a level playing field and to have our place. That's where the value-added grant has really helped. We're the only third-party turkey deboning company in the U.S. And why is that? Is because the labor costs primarily. It's very, for our business model, it is very common in Mexico. There's lower costs of labor and so forth that they can put to it, and they break it down. And so it's very common to ship bone-in product to Mexico and or to other countries with lower labor costs and debone it there, and then they consume the boneless. And being that we're the only third-party deboner in the States, we have to be able to differentiate ourselves and have some kind of competitive advantage to have our place. We've used value-added grants, and she had indicated too, we have gotten three value-added grants over the course of the last number of years. And those were water jet deboning equipment. We put in some water chilling to help cool our water to keep the product colder, and then X-ray technology to help detect bone and foreign material contaminants in the product. With this program, it helped us to really take our business to the next level. We started 11 years ago, my brother and myself, when I was 19 and he was 22. And
I'm sorry, I just exclaimed wow into the microphone. I'm sorry.
School of Hard Knocks. And when we started, we were in a little bit different segment of the industry, and we've evolved since then. And when we started with nine employees who were looking for a paycheck. And as we've been able to transition our company to now where we have 75 people that see it as a career, that our benefits, salary, they've moved there, they've built houses, they've done all those resulting moves since being employed at TFC. And when the question was asked of what has been done or how do you see the results necessarily, right? You see the awards, it's listed, yep, here they are. And I would say that, you know, that as we go in as a small business, as any small business, you face hundreds or thousands of variables, good and bad, challenging or easy. And this is just one big variable that can be a positive and that can really help the business go to the next level. When we started as the two young scrappers, and we've been able to determine our place in this commodity industry, it's not an easy task, and you can't have your toes half dipped in. It's a very overhead intense industry, and the economies of scale that you need when you're competing against some of these large billion-dollar companies. That's who you are selling against. You need to be all in, and you need to have every tool and every resource on your side. Ashby's a town of 450 people, and you know we're everything we bring in and everything we ship out goes south and west, and so we're in the corner of the industry and where all of our suppliers and customers are. But being in Minnesota does have a lot of good aspects and benefits. So we try, though, to, again, differentiate ourselves, have our competitive advantage, and cement ourselves in being a part of the community. We have 18 different rental units throughout Ashby, and whether it's housing that we own or sublet and so forth, we try to really take care of our people and put a lot of emphasis on culture and so forth. So want to just reinforce the importance of the program, how we've really seen it, how we've actually seen the benefits with each project. It has literally resulted in an increase in number of employees, and we would be always open for tours and showing those types of things that we do and and looking at us as an example of how the grant can help. So appreciate the committee's past and support. And
thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Fleming. That was just astonishing to believe that you started so young and stuck with it. And I mean, that kind of risk taking is pretty phenomenal. So thank you for doing that. Any questions? I don't see anyone around the table. Thank you for providing the testimony, for coming down today.
Yes, thank you.
Appreciate it. Ms. Bress.
Thank you, Madam Chair. At this point, I'm going to ask Deanne Lufkin from Cannonball Cheese in Cannon Falls to come down in and join me. While she's on our way, I'll talk a little bit about our new markets programs. Deanne and her company have also received a value-added grant, but they also participate in our new markets programs, most notably our trade show and demo support program, where we are helping small food companies get into new markets. So we will host events at domestic and international trade events where we'll buy up a space, call it a Minnesota pavilion, and offer it to Minnesota food companies at a reduced cost. But we also have an opportunity where we will reimburse small food companies for the cost of doing those in-store demos to help them secure spaces in grocery stores and other retail outlets. Our entire new markets program is typically about $400,000 a year. This year we're looking at $310,000 to $340,000. Through our trade show support program, we will reimburse up to $4,000 a year for companies that are manufacturing in Minnesota. And with that, I would love to be able to turn it over to Deanne.
Welcome to the committee, Ms. Lufkin. If you just state your name and then begin your testimony. Thank you.
Madam Chair, representatives, my name is Deanne Lufkin, and I'm one of the three owners of Cannonball's Cheese. I began this company with my partners, Jackie Oman and Kathy Huff. We started making cheese in the kitchen 9 years ago, simply as a hobby. And it was going so well, and our friends and family kept asking for more, that we decided we could start a business. We took classes, we joined the American Cheese Society, or ACS, to set ourselves up for success. We found a consultant who helped us set a good foundation and develop a roadmap for starting this business. In August of 16, we started making our first cheese commercially at the University of Minnesota pilot plant. 4 years ago, the city of Cannon Falls somehow heard about us and asked if we'd like to be part of the community. We love the local food scene and the town so much. They accepted us with open arms, supporting us at every farmer's market and every step along the way. The community is so important to us that we even named ourselves after them. We feel that it is critical to use as many Minnesota-sourced ingredients as possible. We currently get our milk from the U of M's herd, and when our own plant is up and running, we'll be getting our milk from Square Deal Dairy just down the road in Randolph. We are excited to pair with this amazing farm family, enhancing an already excellent product. We also partner with Gardenaire, a mother-daughter team out of Rochester that grows and blends all of our spices. We even named our Tuscan and Painted Desert cheddars after those spice blends. We are currently developing some aged cheddars using Cannon River Winery's white wines and red wines. And we are proud to be part of Minnesota Grown, and we love to highlight other Minnesota companies. We've found more success than we ever expected over the past few years. In 2017, our Queso Fresco won first place at the American Cheese Society in the Hispanic Portuguese Fresh category, putting our company on a whole new trajectory. That fall, we were picked up by a distributor, Classic Food Provisions, which doubled our cheese sales and continues to grow our markets to this day. That was only 11 months into us existing. We have gone to various trade shows and professional conferences. We have attended the ACS conference since 2016, where we make contacts with distributors, stores, and many, many cheesemakers throughout the world. During this event, there are 3 days worth of classes and seminars which help us expand our cheesemaking knowledge and skills. As we've grown, we've also been invited to attend various trade shows such as Cheesetopia, Minnesota Food and Wine Experience, and Feast in Rochester. At the 2018 Feast event, we won the MDA Ready to Grow Award, which offsets expenses for trade shows. It's about $2,000. With the money from the Ready to Grow Award and the new markets cost share program, we've been able to grow our markets and sales significantly. As a startup, money is very, very tight for us. Last year, this program helped offset costs for attending the ACS conference and trade shows, enhancing our contacts and markets. The in-store retail product sampling and demos reimbursement enable us to hire a demo person, which has expanded the number of stores where we can showcase our cheese. And thanks to this specific cost-sharing program, our sales increased by over 60% during the holiday season this past year. Our distributor even commented how well our sales were going and was impressed with our demo schedule. Our next step is to build our own cheese plant in Cannon Falls. Currently, we can only make about 800 pounds of cheese once a month at the University of Minnesota, severely limiting our growth. We have maxed out at production, and we've been at that level for a year and a half now. Once the plant is built, we will finally be able to expand into more markets and store chains in the Twin Cities, throughout Minnesota, and surrounding states. We anticipate around a 200% growth once our plant is built over the following years. Our biggest challenge has been financing. We have an investor helping us build our building. In fact, the permits were just submitted a few weeks ago. However, the specialized equipment costs, which are up to us, cost over $200,000. Luckily, we were awarded the Minnesota Value Added Grant for over $30,000. This money will help us purchase equipment and software, greatly improving our food safety and the quality of our product. And we are beyond grateful for this grant. The Minnesota Department of Ag has been a critical part of our growth and success. The new markets cost share program and value added grant boost our ability to grow our business. Without these programs, we will be struggling to build our plant and not able to hire much needed help in marketing our cheese. We love this partnership and feel so fortunate to be part of the Minnesota Agricultural Committee. And we thank this committee for their support.
Thank you so much. Any questions? I just had a quick question. So Cannon Falls wasn't where you started then?
I live in Northfield. My partners live in Randolph, and we actually start, one of my partners married a dairy farmer, so we had unlimited milk. And so we started in her kitchen, and somehow somebody in the town of Cannon Falls heard that we wanted to start a business and thought we would fit perfectly in their food scene.
Very good. All right. Thank you. Representative Kleber.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Plymouth is open for business. We love cheese in Plymouth. I would invite you to think about checking out our, I'm teasing. Congratulations, it sounds like a great effort, and I wish you all the success.
Thank you. Thanks for coming to testify today, too. Appreciate it. All right, so Ms. Bruss.
Thank you, Madam Chair. At this point, I'd like to ask Andrew Miron to come down in and join me. And Andrew is a dairy farmer from Hugo. And the family has received a couple of livestock investment grants from us. These grants are intended to help livestock operations initiate and expand their livestock production. And oftentimes these grants are able to help young producers get into the business or be able to transition into the business. We typically plan on doing about $2 million a year for these grants. This year we're looking at about $768,000. Grants range from about $1,000 to $25,000, but they do require that the producer put in 90% of the cost. So oftentimes these grants are just enough, you know, for that farmer to bring the award letter or the contract to the bank and find other financing. We are reviewing these applications, but hope to make announcements very, very soon, within the next week or so. Request this year was about $2.5 million. So at this point, I'm ready to turn it over to Andrew.
Thank you. And thank you, Mr. Miron. Welcome to the committee. And for those around the table here, we recognize that name because his father was here last week talking about the being a Minnesota Milk Producer of the Year. So we are very pleased to welcome you today. So go ahead with your testimony.
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. As stated, my name is Andrew Miron. I live in Hugo, Minnesota, in Washington County. and I'm here today to thank you for your support and recognition of the importance and effectiveness of the Livestock Investment Grant. Miron Farm was established in 1887 in Hugo as a diversified crop and livestock farm. My brother Paul and I represent the fifth generation to now live and work on the farm while maintaining the viable dairy operation. Since completing my degree in 2015 from the University of Minnesota in a double major in animal science and agriculture education, I returned home and we've been expanding our facilities and expanding our dairy. With the successful livestock investment grant in 2017, we built a 76 by 256 foot bedding pack barn to house our milking cows. In 2018, a second grant was awarded, which added milk storage to the farm. You can see in one of the pictures, that's the renovations doing to the milk house. We a little bit more than doubled the size of our milk house and added a second bulk tank and milk storage for the farm. We also worked with XL Energy as they identified significant concerns regarding low voltage on the farm and recommended upgrades to our electrical service. So we made those improvements as well as transitioning the farm over to more LED lighting. Two of our existing barns on the farm were showing some wear in our foundations. We improved those and need those barns as critical parts of our operation. We also put in some yard fencing to increase convenience with cow flow and added waters for both young stock and cow numbers, and made ventilation improvements in some barns to improve air quality for the livestock. These upgrades, coupled with other recent investments, improve profitability and efficiency on our farm and are allowing for a smoother transition plan from one generation to the next. We take deep pride in our farm and its appearance. Our dairy remains one of the few operations near the metro area, and we see an opportunity to continue to communicate a message of good stewardship and livestock care. The Minnesota Department of Ag was excellent to work with, considering all the personnel changes and workers that have contributed to this program. Commissioner Peterson and his wife and other local, state, and federal legislators were among over 2,000 guests at our Breakfast on the Farm held this past September. Between my father and my siblings, we have 5 degrees in education and love promoting things to the public. We would be happy to host this committee or any of its members anytime you guys would like to be if you are interested in coming out for that. As Representative Hansen and Representative Miller stated earlier, just to touch on what you guys talked about, these two grants, as she said, covered 10% of up to a $250,000 investment twice, so a $500,000 investment. These grants actually on our farm have stimulated over $700,000 of improvements that we've done in the last 5 years, roughly. So we can see the value. We're continuing to farm. I know this is only one example, but the program does benefit not only our farm very much, but also the state. Livestock on the land is a very important conservation management best practice as we maintain perennial forages and grasslands and continue to supplement our soils with quality organic matter. Our expansion also allowed us to provide summer internships for students in studying animal science and has been integral to many different suppliers and businesses that we've hired along the way in doing these improvements. Again, I want to say thank you for your support and support of this program, and I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Miron. Thank you. Again, no questions, but thank you for sharing your story, and keep on doing what you're doing because it seems to be very successful. So thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you, Madam Chair, members.
All right. So Ms. Bress or Mr. Huguenin, I think we've reached a conclusion. Do you have any further comments?
Madam Chair, I would just say thank you very much. I think what you just saw in all three of the people who were just in front of you was what actually one of my colleagues said, that these programs help people's dreams come true. whether, you know, that's young farmers starting out, you know, somebody who has a business idea and wants to explore it, these funds, you know, help that happen. And then by with them doing that, they're able to invest in farmers. They're able to invest in rural men in Minnesota, invest in agriculture. So we thank you very, very much for the opportunity.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing the information. It's very thorough and very good. Appreciate that. So we will move on. Representative Brand has House File 3030. And we do have, so that bill is in your packet, as well as a fiscal note, but there will be an amendment to the bill. So the fiscal note was based on the previous version, I think. So there may be a new fiscal note coming. But Representative Brand, would you like to
begin? Yes, Madam Chair, I'd like to move that the House File 3030 be laid over for future consideration.
Thank you, Representative Brand. And just a comment on that. I think there'll be plenty of discussion on this, and we're eager to learn more about this bill and what benefits it has for all of us. So we are just laying it over for now, and we'll maybe be addressing it in the future. But you would like to also move the amendment.
Yes, Madam Chair, I'd like to move the A1 amendment. A1 amendment makes a couple of grammatical changes, but also makes a little bit of a substantive change. This was a peace in the valley sort of amendment as well, to also include 100% juice and chocolate milk along the default children's meal beverage on the menu.
All right, so
I think the most important part of it, though, too, that amendment also switches the Attorney General to the Commissioner of Health, which I think is, I've always had a concern about that, makes it a little bit more appropriate in my mind.
Okay, and the enforcement.
Yep.
So we will have you describe the bill in a moment after we get the amendment on. It's the author's amendment. Any questions? Seeing none, I'd like to take a vote on that. So all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed, nay? Okay, so the motion prevails, the amendment is adopted, the bill is in the form that you are seeking it to be, and I just want you to then begin by presenting the bill. Let us know what it is.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. First, let me just talk a little bit about what this bill isn't. It's not a mandate. This bill does not take away a parent or a consumer's right to choose which beverage they want for their children's meal. But what it is, it's a bill that touches on a subject I think that we have to have a little bit more conversation at the Capitol about. Eating habits develop in youth. I've got a 5- and 8-year-old at home, and so I know that once in a while we go out, and if it's mentioned pop, and us parents, we don't want pop, we'd rather have milk or juice, that kind of ends the discussion, so to speak, because the 5- and 8-year-old heard pop, and so that's automatically what they want. Surveys show in Minnesota that youth are drinking more and more sugary beverages each year. And also I might add that eating out used to be something that happened infrequently, but as we live busier lives these days, is eating out and grabbing fast food is trending on an upward dynamic in Minnesota, but also across the country. So as we grab those meals, restaurants, kids' meals prepare a larger percentage of the food, and as a result, children's meals have calories that also are increased because of the pop with added calories from sugar. Sugary drinks include pop, lemonade, sweetened fruit-flavored beverages, and other beverages with added sugar. It doesn't include flavored milk. According to the American Academy of Pediatrics and the American Heart Association, on average, children in America drink about a bathtub full of pop every year. That's 30 gallons. That's a lot, in my opinion. So one of the things I think that this bill can do also is it can help parents on the go to make healthier options and healthier choices for the children by removing the sugary drinks from those options. This bill would do just that, support parents in making healthier choices. Let's also remember why this bill is in committee, not just the food aspect, but also it's worth reminding the committee that we lost over 300 dairies in Minnesota last year. And part of that undoubtedly is consumer demand is starting to wane off a little bit. And so I know that farmers want this. In fact, this bill was brought to me from a senator who had farmers in her district who requested such legislation be having a conversation in the Capitol. So here we are today having this conversation. I happen to have grown up on a dairy farm. I understand what it's like for dairy farmers to make the tough decisions of selling their cattle herd like we had to do in 1996. And if there's an option that we can do to help provide awareness of the fact that there are other healthy beverages that are out there and help support farmers in our neighborhoods and the farmers in our counties and districts, that's also part of the reason why we're hearing the bill today. And so what I would like to do right now is I'd like to turn it over to a couple of people who wish to testify on behalf of this. First, I'd like to call down Janet Bremer. Janet, can you come down, please?
Welcome to the committee, and if we'll just state your name and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and representatives. My name is Janet Bremer, and I am a dairy farmer, along with my husband, John, in Hastings, Minnesota. I'm also the Minnesota Dairy Princess Coordinator, which means I work with Princess K of the Milky Way. So when you go to the state fair, which I know you all will, and you visit the butter sculptures, those are my girls. But today I'm not going to talk about butter. I'm going to talk about milk. Milk is, as you know, Minnesota's state official drink, and my husband and I are proud to be part of the 2,500 dairy farmers that produce it every single day. It was 1 year ago today when my husband John and I attended the Dairy Day at the Capitol, and while visiting with Senator Bigham and Representative Juergens, John, my husband, expressed an idea. So you've got us to blame for this one. His idea was making milk the default beverage for children's meals. It was an idea that he had read about in a farm magazine. Another state had had this already adopted. Now, I could sit here and I could tell you all the benefits about milk. I could tell you about the 9 essential nutrients that were found in milk, and I can also tell you about the health benefits. But I'm going to leave that to the health advocacy groups that are here today. My husband and I are 5th, and I'm a 6th generation dairy farmer. I guess you could say farming is definitely in our blood. John and I have always been active advocates for the dairy community. Almost 30 years ago, I was giving a tour on our farm to school children, and after describing a typical day on the farm, that begins about 6 a.m. and ends about 14 hours later, and also talking about how we care for our animals and how we care for our land, a third grader raised her hand and said, "So what does your husband do for a job?" That really got me to thinking how important it is for us to tell our own story, what we do, why we do it, and the benefits of dairy foods. And it's not only important for us to share that with children, but also to share it with adults as well. So my hope today is to give you a glimpse of my family's passion for the dairy industry. We participate on social media. We host farm tours. We do school visits. We host a huge Christmas on the farm event. And I've also even had several opportunities to promote dairy with the Minnesota Vikings. And today, I'm here before you sharing my dairy story and the importance of milk, advocating in a much different way. Minnesota's dairy industry has a $9 billion impact on the state. Farm employees, veterinarians, processing plants, transportation companies, retailers, all rely on part with the dairy industry and their contributions. We dairy farmers have been struggling financially. I know you've heard that story before. I know you've heard about low milk prices, poor mental health, and many dairy farmers that are leaving the career that they love. Minnesota's dairy farmers need your help. This bill could help lay the groundwork for revitalizing the dairy industry. Fluid milk sales have slipped in several years, and recently, partially due to children being given the opportunity of having those sugary beverages. As dairy farmers, we hope you join us in support of this bill, which does not take away choices, but hopefully helps nudge people in the right direction of a healthier future for their children. And it simultaneously also benefits dairy farmers. I'm hoping that you will also incorporate that Minnesota's official drink is going to be a part of children's meals. Thank you very much for your time and your consideration.
Thank you for your testimony. Any questions? I don't see any. Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Brand.
Next, I'd like to ask that Moa Vaison come down. He represents Blue Cross Blue Shield.
Thank you.
Are you? Yeah. Welcome to the committee, and if you'll state your name and perhaps spell it as well before you begin the testimony.
Sure. I was here last mm-hmm. year, I believe, and my name was a challenger, but it's pronounced Vajong Moore, and I'm the Director of Health Equity Advocacy at Blue Cross and Blue Shield. I want to first thank you, Madam Chair, and the members of this committee and for hearing and hopefully supporting this bill. I want to begin by recognizing strong alliance with Hunger Day at the Hill. This is not just a issue that impacts hungry and poor people, but it impacts health. And I would say this committee's work is deeply related to the support for hunger relief. I also want to recognize the name of this committee. It's not lost on me that you're called Agriculture and Food Financing, right? And it's my understanding that that is a new title, just last year. And so you may be wondering, why is Blue Cross Blue Shield in this committee? We're more accustomed to being in Health and Human Services. And I just want to call out that not only is it a cool cross-sector collaboration, what public health science tells us is that most of what creates health happens outside of healthcare. In fact, 80% of what creates health is outside of healthcare. And so that actually implicates the agriculture system, the food system. And if we're serious about preventing chronic disease, diabetes, heart disease, we have to be comprehensive, we have to be upstream, and in the name of prevention, begin working with different sectors that impact downstream diseases like diabetes. And so I'm here today not to talk about milk, although I stand in strong solidarity with our milk farmers. I come from a family and people of farmers. In fact, my people have been farming for millennia, and that's the only occupation my people have ever known until actually coming to this country. And so I want to be very clear that there's a convergence of interests between farming, food, public health, and health equity. I also want to recognize that Blue Cross Blue Shield stands in partnership with the Minnesotans for Healthy Kids Coalition. I will hand out a letter of support so you can see the list of supporters. I invite you to peruse all the various names. It's a very strong healthcare, nonprofit, cross-cultural, cross-sector partnership so that you can see that there's a mountain of support for this approach to advancing health. I do want to call out a concern about the amendment. We certainly want to support our dairy farmers and make sure health is the default choice. But we also recognize that in chocolate milk, there are 6 teaspoons of sugar in just one cup of chocolate milk. And I think that warrants more discussion. Okay. We are supportive of 100% juice. That's according to the American Heart Association and basically every health authority, that's a good thing. But we just need to call the question on chocolate milk. Okay. It just warrants more discussion on our part. Yeah. As I mentioned, most of what creates health happens outside healthcare, and that's why we're here today. I also want to connect this more closely to a preventative approach to diabetes and call out the immense healthcare costs associated with diabetes. In Minnesota alone, it costs the state $4.4 billion in medical costs. This is just for diabetes, okay? $4.4 billion in our state. I also want to call out that one in three children and teens eat fast food on a daily basis, and parents simply just want healthier options and healthier choices as the default option. Not to eliminate choices, but to make sure that it's the most convenient, not just the smartest decision. While diabetes is a public health issue and it impacts all of our communities, it's very important that we lift up how the burden of disease is not equitable. We know that in Minnesota alone, the American Indian community has four times the rate of diabetes as the general population. The African American community has 1.5 times diabetes compared to the general population, and the Asian Pacific community has three times the amount of diabetes. And so while diabetes is a public health epidemic, we need to call out that the burden of disease is not playing out equitably. And so your efforts and consideration today would have a very serious and strong health equity impact. And it's beyond just the moral imperative and addressing the cross-cutting inequities. There's a very real financial cost to this. That inequity, that difference in health, a study produced by the University of Minnesota concluded that these inequities cost us $2.26 billion a year here in Minnesota. And I just want to emphasize that these diseases are primarily preventable. They're primarily preventable. And what can $2.26 billion get you? It can construct 54 hospitals. It can construct 15 high schools. And that's on an annual basis. And so I want to be mindful that as I'm making a quantitative argument, that the centerpiece of this is saving lives and improving health. But it's not only the right thing to do, it's the effective thing to do. And so we are looking at the environment, and we want to make sure health is built into our natural environment, that it's the first choice, it's the natural choice, it's not the smart, savvy choice, and that you have to dig around to make health the top choice. So today, we support Representative Brand and all the authors in bringing forward legislation that would make kids' health, parents' choice, focus on health, and making that the default option. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Moore. All right, Representative Brand, any other testifiers?
Yes, I don't see Melvin Anderson here, but is there anybody else here from Youth Determined to Succeed? I had the invite to them, and they indicated they wanted to be here. Well, maybe not today then. Okay, but I know Stu Laurie is here from Minnesota Farmers Union. When we had our press conference, Minnesota Farmers Union was also in support, so I'd like to invite him down.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Laurie.
Thank you, Chair Poppe and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Stu Laurie. I'm the Government Relations Director for Minnesota Farmers Union. And I'll be brief, just want to echo some of the thoughts that the Bremers so well shared earlier in their testimony, but I've had the opportunity to speak to some of our dairy farmer leaders on this bill. Of course, they're proud of the healthful product that they produce, and believe that that this would make it easier for parents to make a good decision for their kids, and to the extent that it increases the consumption of dairy in Minnesota, that will improve their bottom line, and we're eager to support it. So thanks so much, Representative Brand, and for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Mr. Laurie. I don't see any questions. I know we do have somebody on the list, Ben Wagsland from Hospitality Minnesota. Yes. So welcome to the committee. Just state your name and begin your testimony.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee, committee staff. My name is Ben Wagsland. I'm the Director of Government Relations for Hospitality Minnesota. We represent the restaurant industry, lodging industry, and resorts and campground industry in Minnesota, supporting 1 in 10 jobs in Minnesota, I believe over $6 billion in wages, and generate 18% of the Minnesota sales tax, so a very significant part of the Minnesota economy here. I want to start out by just saying we appreciate the spirit of what Representative Brand is trying to do with the bill here. Obviously, we support healthy choices for kids. And frankly, Minnesota restaurants have actually been leaders in that regard in recent years. If you look around both at quick service or QSR restaurants and full service restaurants, the vast majority of kids' meals now include some of these options. So whether that be water, whether that be milk or a milk alternative. We've been working with the author as well as the author and the other body, however, to clarify that there are other healthy options that are currently offered side by side with milk or water or milk alternatives, and that includes 100% juice options or chocolate milk. And so thankful for the amendment today, and just wanted to put that on the record and make sure that we're able to continue to work with the author as this bill goes forward to make sure that we're protecting consumer choice and that we're also including all the scope of healthy options on the menu and advertising materials and things of that nature. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Wachtland. Any other testifiers? Anyone else in the audience who would like to come down to speak for or against or provide any testimony? I don't see anyone else. Members, any questions? Representative Keel, I think you had a comment or question, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I do. Thank you very much, Representative Brand. Certainly, we want to be promoting our children to drink milk, and I would even go so far as to suggest that we should maybe be starting to encourage our children to not just drink any milk, but drink whole milk, because anyone knows that when an infant is born, the best thing that they have is mother's milk, and it is full of cholesterol. And so while we've gone back in our world of thinking we need low fat, I've spent a little bit of time researching all of this in my own life, and think that maybe our children would be fuller, faster, and more satisfied with a little bit more fat in their diet, and helping their little brains to expand is important. I also wanted to point out something. Members, if you don't know, audience, I am a sugar grower. So when I hear from the Department of about sugar, I want to tell you that sugar is not bad for you. Overeating sugar is not any better for you than eating only broccoli. It is not healthy to have one thing. I would like to point out to you that there is 20 calories in a teaspoon of sugar, and milk naturally has sugar in it. And if you go to the grocery store, and I encourage you all to do this, go look at your milk. Look and see what skim milk has for the amount of sugar in it to whole milk. Whole milk is actually less sugar. I would also share with you that chocolate milk is not horrible for you. I survived on it. I didn't drink white milk when I was a kid. For some reason, it bothered me, and my parents allowed me to. Anyway, but I think it's the balance of how much sugar you have in that drink, not the fact that it's bad. But I just want to point out that milk is good for kids. I think we need to push more whole milk. I have grandchildren that drink raw milk, dairy. They don't even like that carton stuff anymore. And that's what their father grew up on, so that's what they enjoy. But I just want to point out that we need to be promoting good things for our children, and I want to also point out sugar's not bad. Just don't eat a lot of it. Thanks.
Thank you, Representative Keel. Yes, I think that was the comment of Blue Cross Blue Shield talking about that kind of the balance. But appreciate your advocacy for the industry and the work that you do. So thank you for that. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I, too, support the idea of encouraging more milk consumption, not only for kids but for adults as well. Just have a concern about the bill in general, and this is not, again, the impact of the intent. But Representative Brand, you say it's not a mandate, yet the bill summary, the first line says the bill requires, and bill language says on line 1.17, must make, and on page 2, line 10, now it's the Commissioner of Health must enforce this section. So just kind of soothe the soul here with what is the actual intent, and if there's any kind of enforcement action, what do you contemplate that to be?
Representative Brand.
Madam Chair, thank you. To answer your question, Representative Anderson, if you look at subdivision 3, it says there's no prohibition. And so that's exactly what was meant to be in there. Specifically the layout, there's no mandate. You can get whatever you want. There's no penalty. There's going to be no surcharge with this bill, that sort of thing. As far as enforcement goes, we talked with the Department of Health. They have a $0 fiscal note. They don't anticipate it costing much or taking a lot of resources. If somebody, a consumer, were to complain, they would take that complaint and do the research on it, but they don't anticipate doing very much of that.
Representative Anderson.
Thanks again, Madam Chair. Well, that's good to hear. Although in the fiscal note, which may be not important anymore, it talked about constitutional challenge. Comment on that.
Representative Brand.
Constitutional challenge, I guess I wasn't, I didn't see that part in there, but maybe I'll have to relook at that. Hold on 1 second. Are you talking about the Attorney General or the Children or the Health Department?
It's the very last line on page 9.
Page 9, okay.
Fine. Representative Anderson, were you referencing for? Sorry.
Well, it's on the fiscal note.
Oh, okay.
Received.
Got it.
Again, it may be out of date because it's Attorney General, but it did mention a challenge on page 9.
Okay, thank you. So, Representative Brand, do you see that on?
Yeah, let's see here. It's, if a constitutional challenge were to arise, the attorney, we have, I know at one point there was a challenge of whether or not we could do something like this in the menu, but I don't see that this challenge still exists. Just getting some quick counsel on that as well.
I think, and we can ask the council to on this fiscal note, maybe Mr. Savory or Mr. Sullivan, I don't know who wants to answer it, but just regarding the fiscal note and how up-to-date it is based on the amended bill, and Mr. Sure. Savory.
Madam Chair and members, just to clarify, because of the amendment the committee approved or is now on the bill, the Attorney General would not play a role in the enforcement action of House File 3030 should it become law. So with that said, I understand the question, but I think that going forward, the Attorney General wouldn't really have a role to play in any sort of action regarding that. It would first be a Health Department concern.
Thank you. So I think we've got a number of pages of this. It looks like some of them are related to the Attorney General and others, maybe the Ag Department or other things. So I don't know if there's, but there will be a different fiscal note based on the amended bill now. And we are laying this over. I think there is further discussion. You know, people will, the concept, the idea, helping our kids to guide them to, you know, make those choices, those healthy choices, is important for us. We have another, Representative Anderson, were you done with questions?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay, Representative Lippert.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Brand, for just inviting us to have this conversation. I'm looking at the Minnesotans for Healthy Kids Coalition letter that's in front of us, and the list of health organizations behind this bill is significant, and I think we should be paying attention to that. The image of our children drinking a bathtub's worth of soda a year is a really powerful image. I saw everyone reacting to that as that was being mentioned. And as a parent with children myself, when we go out to eat, we try to make sure that if they're ordering soda, they don't get it until the meal arrives, or we realize that they don't eat their meal because they're just drinking the soda. So I think this is a significant conversation for the health of our children and our state, and I appreciate you starting it today.
Thank you. So I don't see any other questions. Representative Brand, any closing comments?
Yep. I'll close just by reiterating that fact that 30 gallons, that comes from the American Society of Pediatrics and the American Heart Association. So that's pretty standard information right now, and that's average child. Some eat more, some eat less, obviously. That also doesn't take into account any food that also might so on average they're probably consuming more than 30 gallons worth. But it's important to note that. I just want to take a minute to point out the Center for Science and the Public Interest put out a 19-pager last year, July of 2019. Soda still on the menu. Progress, but more to do to get soda out of restaurant children's menus. And I guess the really interesting thing is that in the 1970s, only 26% of people went out to eat. And now that's over half of that's on a daily, or no, on a weekly basis, rather. Now that number is over half. So over half of the Americans go out on a daily, on a weekly basis out to eat. We're grabbing stuff on the go in the interest of supporting families, in the interest of supporting healthy families, providing maybe a little bit more focus on a nutritious beverage like milk is in the interest of public consumer protection and that sort of thing. And so I really look forward to working on this bill. I really look forward to working on the bill and getting into another committee and passing this off. I really think it will benefit a lot of people across the state, not just children, but also the farmers who produce the milk. And we should all be in the interest, I guess, of building stronger communities. That's part of the reason I wish to be here in the first place, is to help build stronger communities. And I do think that this bill will do that. So I appreciate your support today. And I would ask again to renew my motion to lay this bill over for possible consideration.
Thank you. Thanks for that discussion. Thank you, Mrs. Bremer, for giving us the insight and how this all came to be. And, you know, it's good to have citizen input and constituent engagement, and we appreciate that. So thank you. So thanks for the discussion today. This bill will be laid over for future consideration. And I just wanted to give an update on the Representative Hamilton had asked me about the RFA, the Rural Finance Authority bill. That will be heard in Ways and Means Monday morning, and then soon, hopefully, to be put before the body in the House after that meeting, after the Ways and Means. Yes, and I know that it is something we're all wanting to see happen as soon as possible. And so we're trying to make sure we're matching things up with the Senate as well. And, you know, some of these things happen at a leadership level that maybe are beyond us, but we're all, I think we're all providing the pressure needed to move this forward. So I appreciate your sense of urgency on that as well. Yes, Representative Anderson.
Well, on a related topic, Madam Chair, are we still going to hear the bills on the cottage foods industry?
That's
thing?
A great question. I think they've Representative Lippert is carrying the cottage food. I think at this point they were still under some discussion, working on some things. So they aren't currently scheduled. We've got our next week schedule out, so we know what's happening next week. But beyond that, we maybe will still have a little fluidity in our calendar. So appreciate that question. Anyway, everybody have a good weekend. Drink milk, enjoy it, and meeting adjourned.